Welcome, everyone, to the Wonder and Awe podcast, A Journey into the Soul. I'm Louis Schwartzberg, and I like to make films that celebrate life. I'm very grateful to the Fetzer Institute for supporting the Wonder and Awe series. And in this moment, I'm very grateful knowing that you've joined us to go on the journey of discovery with Danielle Laporte. Danielle Laporte is a member of Oprah's Super Soul 100, a group, in Oprah's words, that's uniquely connecting the world together with spiritual energy that matters. She's a former director of the Future Studies think tank in Washington, D.C., where she managed a team creating global scenarios. Danielle now speaks about the intelligence of the heart. Danielle is the creator of the Heart-Centered Membership and Heart-Centered Leadership Program, with 400 coaches and facilitators in 30 countries hosting conversation circles and workshops on resilience and collective kindness. Her most recent book is How to Be Loving When Your Heart is Breaking Open and the World is Waking Up, also on audiobook, deck, and journal. Danielle's also the author of the Firestarter Sessions, The Desire Map, White Hot Truth, and producer of dozens of meditation kits and programs for spiritual support. Her podcast, With Love, Danielle, has ranked in iTunes top 10 for wellness, and most of her offerings are on a pay-what-you-choose basis. How cool is that? Named by one of the top 100 websites for women by Forbes, millions of people a month visit daniellaporte.com. Marianne Williamson refers to Danielle as a very bright light, and V calls her a force field of energy, wonder, humor, and love. Danielle lives in Vancouver, and I want to thank Danielle so much for being on this podcast.
It's going to be good. I love that you're sponsored by Fetzer.
Yeah. What is it? Something for a spiritual world? Loving kindness for a spiritual world? We can get on that. I'm really excited to talk to you because I love your new book, How to Be Loving When Your Heart is Breaking and the World is Waking Up. A lot of times people ask me, like, what's going on today? And I sometimes say we're going on through these periods of breakdown and breakthrough, you know, incredible, you know, breakdown in fossil fuel economy, politics, economics, but breakthrough with technology, consciousness, everything that's happening at the same time. And in your book, you have so many nuggets of wisdom that are literally back to back, but it's all down to earth and very accessible to a wide audience. I really, really admire that you're reaching out to really, you know, I think generate a movement. I want to just maybe start at the beginning. Like, how did you decide to go on this path of spirituality? I mean, was it something that you grew up and always had inside of you? Something that evolved? It's always interesting to know how one started their journey.
Catholic school. Yeah. And like, I loved Jesus and I loved all the ritual. And I remember even before I went to school, like I was, you know, but kind of pre-kindergarten, there was an aunt of mine, her name was Beatrice. And she was beautiful. And I found a picture of her in a habit. And I was like, what? And they explained to me that she'd been in the convent and she'd left the convent. And I thought, oh, I don't have to be a nun. I can still, because there was something about her. She was so devoted and she was so radiant. But yeah, I thought when I was younger, I was like, how do I get to marry Jesus? And then none of it made sense and all of it falls apart and you get into the whole concepts of original sin and, you know, going to confession when you're in grade two and making up lies. And I remember sitting in the back row and they're like, well, what are you going to say? Everybody just kind of came up with these lies. I just feel like I was born open. And at the same time, I feel like I was born with a broken heart and it's a good thing. It's access that heartache gives me access to a lot of joy.
Yeah. You need the contrast. I mean, that's why, like, you know, part of the reason I made Gratitude Revealed, is with my parents being Holocaust survivors, I learned, you know, growing up to appreciate, you know, all the little things in life that, was heaven on earth to them, like food on the table, a roof over your head, the miracle of having children and still having love and joy in their life. And so, you know, stories about people who overcome adversity are stories that I love to tell. But I also went through Hebrew school, which the only thing you got out of that was the Ten Commandments. And I got bummed out that I couldn't play Little League on Saturday. You know, so it was not a real spiritual journey for me either. But we've discovered it. So let's talk about that. This is about wonder and awe. Mm. I want to know, like, what does wonder and awe mean to you?
Mm. Awe for me is, it's that place of deep presence. It's the stillness that moves. And that's where the awe comes in. It's almost like those moments where you witness both sides, dark and light, you know, perfection and lots of things that need to be improved upon. And it's awesome. It's like, you know, I'd say like any transcendental experience I've had is that I just feel, wow, everything is sublime and perfect and ordained and planned, and it could all go sideways and it would be perfect too. And there's, everything's good, and there's so much work to be done. You know, it's that.
Yeah, because once you see it, you know, and you have that aha moment, you want to be able to, you know, do it, you know, to integrate, you know, if you have that kind of insight or enlightenment or whatever you call it, you know, because that's what happens, I guess, when you get to the stillness, right? Your inner voice rises and you hear the truth, whether it comes maybe from inside of you or the tree next to you, you're experiencing the truth. And then you want to do something about it. Mm-hmm. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. You want to explain it.
Yep.
You want to teach it. You want to monetize it. Do something. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or you want to go back to it. It's like those bliss experiences I've had, I knew they were, the word isn't correct, but I'd say I knew they were true because simultaneously, I felt like, wow, I'm part of the universe. I'm directing the course. If I move this way, the universe is going to move this way. And, you know, I felt there was lots of color. There's lots of light. There's lots of expansion. It is definitely what most of us would call love. And then I thought, I got up from my cushion and I thought, I got to do the dishes. And there was no judgment for having to do the dishes. It didn't feel like I was up and then I dropped down. It felt like, I went from constellations floating in space, oneness, to, I'm going to walk into my kitchen right now as this. But the trick is I want it again. Like I have to talk myself out of trying to recreate that experience and go back. And I pray for it. I want more enlightenment moments, but why not now? Why not?
Yeah.
This is,
well, I think it's all the practices, you know, talk about just becoming really present, you know, and it doesn't have to even be a transcendental moment. It's just that moment of being present, you know, in your garden when you wake up. That's what I do. I don't really have a meditation practice. I check out the garden and then I figure out in my time lapse room, did the flower open or not? Did she perform or did she not perform? Do I need to go to another casting session and find another flower? You know? So, it's like you can experience it like in these momentary, you know, moments, which connects you to nature. And what I love about that is I think it makes you an eco-warrior because then you really want to do everything you can to protect nature, mm-hmm. at least for me, because that's when I get those feelings of wonder and awe, is being surrounded by some beautiful landscape, mm-hmm. by being surrounded by beauty. What is beauty to you?
Beauty for me is closely related to service, to seva. So seva being, you know, the definition being selfless service, because I feel like there's this aesthetic beauty, which, you know, there's lots of data around this that, you know, we're drawn to symmetry, drawn to particular colors and vibrations. But I think there's this energetic kind of symmetry that happens. Like when you're in your heart, your happiness matters as much to me as my happiness. And there's harmony in that. Like I feel we're connected and I want the best for you. I want mercy. I want to help you not suffer. I feel relieved that you could help me not suffer. I feel like that is beauty. There's something really connected to service. It's like, it reminds me of, there's a definition in mathematics that the best solution is always the most elegant and beautiful.
Yeah.
So simplicity and simple fact is, you know, we're all from the same source. So what I do matters. Yeah.
Yeah. Nature does that too. I mean, efficiency is part of resilience. Then that's also part of survival and part of flourishing. That's all nature's operating instructions. That's how it operates. So efficiency is really a good thing. Yeah. And that has a lot to do with design, you know. What do you think about the fact? I mean, I know we both share the fact that everything is connected, but like, you know, these neural mycelial pathways that are under the ground that mirror the circulatory system, our brains, the cosmos. Because you know what? I really wanted to ask you about, you talk about reflection. Like, I think that's a big thing for you and maybe one of your virtues, but for me, it's a big deal as well. So I want to hear your thoughts about reflection.
I think a heart-centered life is a reflective life, meaning you are thinking about what's happening, why it's happening. You want to know, you're curious. Why did I behave that way? Why did I say that? Like you want to look into what I would call the basement of your psyche. You want to know what makes people tick. You might have bigger questions about how the universe works. I don't think though that having, I don't think you have to have bigger questions about how the universe works to be heart-centered and aligned with your soul and to be a loving person and to be evolving. Mm-hmm. I think there's lots of us that are just more in the moment. We're not even asking. We're not in that mind space. We're just really in the being space. But for me, living more reflectively keeps me sane. I feel close to something higher than myself. It helps me get back to the beauty of being of service. And the irony is, like I used to say, when people would say, oh, you're a writer. I said, well, you know, I don't actually think of myself as a writer. I think of myself as a seeker. I'm looking for stuff and I write about what I find. And like, I hope it like flattens your learning curve. But actually, I don't even love that term anymore. Like I'm a little exhausted with the seeking.
I think we share something in common. I think we're both adventurers on a journey of discovery. I think without that sense of curiosity and having that blank slate, why even do it? You know, why even go down that path? And so I also, you know, look for these rhythms and patterns, you know, visuals that I think are fingerprints of the universe, the cracks in the rock, the ocean wave crash in slow-mo, the patterns of the stars. I mean, you know, the roots in the tree that look like the, you know, anatomy of your body. Mm-hmm. It's a reflection of an order, right? Mm-hmm. That everything is, you know, somehow divinely connected, because for whatever reason, these patterns are visually similar, you know, and beautiful, which is really, you know, remarkable as well. And I think that for me, that creates maybe a contemplative or transformational experience when people watch my films, because they always go, oh my God, you know, and it's more than me figuring out like what's going to turn them on. It's more like recognizing universal rhythms and patterns that are inside of all of us. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And for me, this is a real basic awareness. I am made of the elements. And that, you know, I did a piece on Earth Day where I just like, okay, I think this is the best way to honor Gaia today, is like everything you have in your life is because of the mother. Everything. The microphone, the computer, your vehicle, the person you work with. We all are made of that substance. And that kind of, it's this like really primal awareness that I think we just gloss over all the time. I think, like, you know, I used to identify, I saw myself, this is like in the early days, I was living and working in Toronto. One of my first real jobs, this is one of my last real jobs, actually, haven't worked since my 20s, really. I was working at the Body Shop, which at the time was like really this kind of leading edge business. It was like eco-friendly body care. And we added this triple bottom line and social responsibility and all of this. And I really saw myself as this environmentalist, because I'm living on the land. And then I grew up a little more. It's like, oh, I'm going to live with the land. And then I realized, like, I'm here because of the land.
And you are the land too.
And I am the land too. I am the land too. Yeah.
There's a trillion cells in your body that is somehow working in harmony. You're like, you know, even we're like I just heard yesterday, we're 0.01% of the biomass on the planet, you know, but we're in an 80 percentile of size of organisms on the planet, you know. So most life on our planet is smaller than us, you know, things like bacteria and you know, fungi and plants, they, you know, we're a speck on their, that joined the party, you know. Mm-hmm. So we have to be careful not to make it unravel, because they could dump us and they'll still party on, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the biosphere doesn't need us.
So I want to ask you also about virtue. I think you said that maybe, desire is out, virtue's in, and you want to bring a little bit of sexiness back to virtue. I also am really into virtue. And what did you mean by that?
My definition of virtue is, virtues are like a soul quality. It's like, actually the easiest way to explain this is to talk about love. Mm-hmm. Love is not a feeling or an emotion. Love is a state of consciousness. It's a frequency of being. And then, you know, you can stretch your thinking out further to just comprehend, try and comprehend, like it's the stuff we're made of. Two forces come together, the yin and the substance is love. But love isn't something that you do or that you feel. It's something that you embody. And when you embody it, then you feel certain things. You feel bliss and you feel oneness and all those things. The visual that I get is that I see love, I see source, as it's like this sun, it's this great light. And all of these rays of light shooting off of that orb are different virtues. They're all children of love itself. So the mother virtue, the cardinal virtue, is divine love. And she gives birth to all the baby virtues, forgiving and compassion and resilience and joy and generosity. And the evolution for this for me was, the question used to be, how do I want to feel? And I had come up with all my answers. I feel happy and connected and accomplished and prosperous, all those things. And I was in a really dark period of my life, helped a friend out. I thought, you know, I was in a dark place. She was in a dark place. And after helping her out, I realized, wow, even though I'm in this agony, in loving her and receiving her love, experience all these beautiful things. And the epiphany was, my fulfillment is not predicated on me being in a good mood. Mm-hmm. And I think I've been going after the wrong thing. And it ain't all about feeling good. It is about feeling love, to being love no matter what. And then you get all sorts of positive feelings from that.
But right.
There was this gap in my life where, you know, I was going after the feelings. Desire was really driving things. I also always had this kind of haunting of, even though I was writing a lot about desire and holistic goal setting, I was really aware of, you know, what the Buddha had to say, that, you know, desiring is the source of suffering. It's like, oh, never mind. We're going to just stay holistic. I'm going to make this work. And also, you know, on the other side of that gap was, I really did want to be I didn't want to be able to be thrown off. I wanted equanimity. I didn't even know the word at the time, but I wanted equanimity. I wanted to be kind no matter what happened. And you don't get there through desire. You don't get there through wanting to be happy. You get to be happy, but you got to go through, it's a higher path actually. Yeah.
I think it's similar to, you know, to gratitude, because, you know, the practice of it is so simple. If one can just say one thing they're grateful for in the moment to stop that negative rumination. And again, you know, telling others that you're grateful for what they did, is like you said, you're sharing that, you're helping somebody else feel good. And then you get the benefit of that as well. Mm-hmm. And it's similar. So it's like, it's sharing love, right? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that, I mean, such a simple practice, because, you know, with Gratitude Revealed, the film, I've been interviewed a lot about what is gratitude and what's the practice and all that stuff. And, you know, in the film, we don't tell anyone like how to live their life or what to do. We're just examples of remarkable but ordinary people that are passionate about their life and that are living their life to the fullness, you know. And then
because
if you can get
grateful.
Yeah, they're grateful, right? They're and they love what they do. They love what they do, and not about money, whether it's making a chair or, you know, being a jazz player, whatever it might be. They love what they do. Okay. I think you love what you do, right?
Oh yeah,
totally.
Yeah, I would. It would be a sham if I didn't.
Yeah. But then we
really bad branding.
No, but like we all need to love, you know, what we do. So one of the things. Because, like, you know, we've all heard it. There was a big article in New York Times yesterday, Gratitude's Good for You. And it had all the science.
Was it featured?
Yeah, it was a feature article in New York Times about gratitude.
But what about, had all the, did they mention you in the film?
No.
Well,
who's going to read the scientific journals compared to how many people are going to watch a movie, you know? Yeah. So I'm expressing gratitude, mm-hmm. you know, as well. That's different than a clinical trial. But they're both good. They're both really good, because people need to have the efficacy and the data, right? Yeah. That it's good for you, that it's good for your health. But when you were talking about, you know, in the embodiment of love, that everything you do is from that lens, you know, you go on a walk, you're washing the dishes, whatever it might be, even the difficulties, it is gratitude. And it's also a practice that I just recently realized I'm doing my whole life, which is looking for beauty everywhere I go, because I kind of do that with the camera, but without the camera, I'm always aware of where the light is and what the pattern is and looking for, in a sense, the beauty, the positiveness, because beauty drives our behavior by appealing to our sensory receptors, you know? And so it's another way of, I think, incorporate like love and beauty, and you're looking for the positive, looking for what's beautiful in front of you, is a practice that's easy to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that that way of looking is, there's something about us really owning our free will and our godliness, and the practice of always seeing the beauty is the direct route to doing that. Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not easy. I mean, we all know there's challenges every day, that things get in your way, that, yeah. Yeah. But at least you can come back to it, because it's what I like about that and gratitude. It's easy. What can I be grateful for in this moment? I'm talking to Danielle, you know, mm-hmm. I'm breathing. Mm-hmm. I mean, and I do believe you can't hold a negative and a positive thought in your mind at the same time. So it's like an easy way, when it's hard, to press that pause button on ruminating over something that's troubling you, mm-hmm. you know, and to break that pattern, just give yourself a break, you know?
I think maybe you can't hold a positive and negative thought simultaneously in your mind, but you can hold a positive and negative thought in your heart simultaneously. And that's an important revelation and practice, because the shadow side of that belief is that we spiritually bypass all of the negative feelings. And, you know, when I've talked about gratitude in the past, what I have to say is, you know, the dark side of gratitude, you know, in quotes, is using it to not deal with your pain and kind of shellac everything over with, well, everything happens for a reason, or this was karma, this is my family of origin stuff. And then you end up having to deal with that stuff further down the road. So I'm into legit gratitude and finding what you can be grateful for. Like, what from that shit situation expanded you? You don't want to be grateful for, you know, the perpetration or the harm or whatever it is, because what you're grateful for expands. But you look at what you can take of it, because, you know, I've stood up in large auditoriums talking to people about finding the beauty in everything. And if someone has the courage, they'll grab the microphone and stand up and say, "You're telling me I should be grateful for the assault or the abuse or the whatever?" And you have to have a bigger, deeper answer for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, everything in moderation, I guess. I mean, not to ignore any of that. But, you know, that stuff, when you do look for the silver lining, there's sometimes you find it's true that it does make you stronger, you know, and that it shaped your journey for some reason, you know, having to overcome adversity. Mm-hmm. And
all adversity serves a function. There's a reason to be grateful. Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's hard and super hard for lots of people.
Well, what would, I mean, if just to really test this, was there any gratitude from your parents expressed about who they became as a result of their suffering in the Holocaust? Like, was there ever that kind of conversation?
You know, we never had those, any kind of quote unquote deep conversations about it, because I think for my dad, it was hard to talk about at all. It was all buried. And my mom, I think, was very proud that she survived. She was like, "I showed them," because, you know, the only thing, weapon she had was to survive and bear witness to tell the story. So she was proud to show the tattoo on her forearm. She was proud to go to like schools and talk about it, because that was her way of getting even, you know, or speaking the truth. So, but we didn't get philosophic about it in that way. But that's a great question, you know. They didn't have the ability. You know, none of those folks ever had an ounce of counseling, quote unquote PTSD. Yeah, you know, nobody did.
Yeah,
not a single person. It's pretty shocking.
The word trauma wasn't even in the lexicon at that time.
Yeah. But here's the beauty, Danielle. I think you'll appreciate this. So when they, you know, at liberation, My dad is a roommate with my quote unquote uncle, because what happened was they were looking to find who survived, who had a brother or sister that made it. You know, the plan was maybe to go home, you know, after this terrible thing happened. And so, anyways, they discovered that his roommate's sister was alive, and they met each other, and in 2 weeks they got married. And friends who they just met only a couple of days ago stood in for their parents to walk them down the aisle. And so look at this beautiful thing that occurred, you know, out of this obviously horror of, like, from ashes comes rebirth. this incredible desire to like, let's get it on, you know, move forward. Resilient, all that stuff. And in a celebratory way, that story has never been told. It's what I want to tell someday, but I'm just saying it's happiness is what it was to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. You know,
we shall rise. Yeah.
Yeah. Let me ask you also, it's one other thing about, I think, love and this idea of looking at the world differently, that you're saying that maybe this idea of gentleness could be a counterculture move.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what do you mean by that?
A couple layers. My experience on my path has been, I've become a more gentle person. Like the result, I'd say the fruit of my spiritual labor is more gentleness, less aggressive striving, less self-criticism, less criticism of other people, all those beautiful things, right? It's also the quality that I'm most attracted to, respectful of actually in other leaders. Like the spiritual leaders I resonate with the most have this kind of gentle demeanor to them. It took me a while to piece that together. I think gentleness is the medicine for all of our ills right now. If we could listen more gently, speak more gently, sing more gently, produce more gently, we educate more gently, there would be fewer right and wrong answers. There would be less division. There would be far less violence. We would have way more room for different versions and expressions of morality and ethics. And, you know, I really love the concept of antidotes. And I want to be the antidote to what's happening right now. I want to bring balance to it. And, you know, what we're living in is polarization and aggression. And, you know, morality is depends on who you're talking to. That's kind of a subjective thing. But when things are aggressive and we're addicted to striving.
Yeah. Well, and then, as you know, I have like one foot in the entertainment industry. And when I first came back to LA after living as a hippie up in Elk, I showed them all my, you know, amazing time lapse and 35 millimeter and all this beauty. And they went, oh my God, it's amazing. But we don't know what to do with it because you can't tell a story without conflict. And immediately my brain went, bullshit, you know? Mm-hmm. And luckily the people that picked up on what I was doing were like the ad agencies, because they're in the game of grabbing your eyeball, mm-hmm. grabbing your consciousness in like a fraction of a second, you know? Mm-hmm. So, but the entertainment or the, you know, the stuff on TV, unfortunately, is based on the old story. I mean, definitely need a new story. And the old story is based on conflict, on pressing the fear button, on revenge, on exploitation of sex or violence. I mean, all of that. And it's overwhelming, we all know. And social media is overwhelming. So like you, I want to be a little bit of the antidote, just by showing, you know, the beauty of nature and people's lives and souls, because we're all getting brainwashed, to be quite honest, with the amount of time we're looking at screens, you know, and the screens aren't going away and the phones aren't going away, because now they're a part of our brain. Now you got this thing called AI hanging around the corner, you know, which would make all that stuff supercharged even more. Right. So we need a new story. And I love your book and I love your worldview, because you're talking about in a crazy way. I mean, could this be heaven on earth instead of hell, instead of fighting with each other? I mean, it could be. Maybe it is. We haven't woken up. Maybe that's part of your title of that the world is waking up while our hearts are being broken.
Mm. I think why we're here is to learn to embody the heaven on earth, to be the love no matter what, like love as is, love no matter what's going on. I think that's why we incarnate.
So you chose to be here, right? In this particular time? Because it is a
1,000%. I have questioned the sanity of my choice many times. But yeah, I mean, how many trillion cells that are doing what they're doing at a time? Like, what? That's the thing. You know, when you get into, when you get deep into nature and you see the patterns, and you can drill down into the fractal and see that there's order in that chaos, it's really going to change how you feel about sitting in a traffic jam or a breakup or not getting what you want. It's just like, oh, wait, there might be something bigger going on here.
Yeah, and it's a miracle, you know. Hey, let me ask you a question that bewilders me. So, you know, we talk about, you know, that blissful moment, the thing about wonder and awe. And when I go there, and then, you know, what I think, you know, when I tell people, just feel it. You know, you don't have to have a name for it. It's not God or this or whatever. I mean, just experience it. But I have a hard time not also wanting to observe it. You know, to be aware of what to be aware of what I'm feeling, to understand it. And maybe it's like you could say, well, just let go. It's just, you know, it's the mystery, and just, you know, love it for that, you know. But there's always a part of my brain, maybe as a filmmaker and someone that wants to share stories, where I want to be able to observe it in order to share the story. What do you think?
I think that's natural. You want to siphon it through the mind so it can have some utility. And it's going to happen. I don't think it's the aim. I think the aim is to be, and we can only do this in increments. It's like, ideally, we're just going to get so lost that we're not going to want to think about it. We're not going to want to turn it into anything, but we don't sustain that. I think if you can sustain that, you peace out. You don't need to be here anymore. Like, you got it. You got it. And you can move on. Or you can sustain those states for long periods of time and then just walk amongst us as a master and carry that vibration and heal people, you know?
Or maybe just use it as a battery recharge. You just got to get recharged. It's like, you get, like, sleep, like a healthy meal, right?
Every once in a while, isn't it a beautiful inclination to want to do something with it too?
So yeah.
Like, I've gone through phases, well, I'm going to put it in the past. I mean, I've really been down on my ego, and then I turn in like, oh, I'm going to get down on my mind. And I don't have that viewpoint as much anymore. It's just like, first of all, I made my ego. It's my baby. I manufactured it. I'm not going to outcast it. I'm going to be responsible for it. I'm going to integrate it. So there's that. And the mind is what we use to create. I mean, the heart is beingness. The heart is the universe. The universe wants to make something. It structures it. It says, what can I do with this? What's going to be black? What's going to be white? Where is there light? Where there's darkness? Where is the beginning? Where is the end? So it moves us into, are you going to use that numinosity? You're going to use the mind for what, on whose behalf are you going to use the mind? Yeah. The egos or the hearts?
Mm-hmm. Well, for me, there's only one answer to that. It's whatever it takes to protect and celebrate life.
Yeah. Yeah. Love.
I want to be in sync with that, you know? Mm-hmm. That should be our new religion. Why hasn't anyone come up with the idea of calling a religion life and just simplify the whole thing?
Right? Somebody has, but it didn't get enough clicks. I don't know.
Oh, really?
No one wanted to fund it.
Yeah. It's the ultimate. Yeah. So I love that, you know, well, one more question about what you were talking about, this balance between the love that's in your heart and the mind that is having to figure out how to integrate or manage it or use it for its greatest purpose. This you know, thing that's going back and forth. I guess, you know, either how do you navigate it, or once you become aware that that's happening, how can you maximize it for its greatest potential?
Maximize the mind.
Maximize this relationship between the mind and the heart being this inclusive thing and the mind being the thing that helps you kind of figure out how to manifest something based on what truth you just discovered.
Mm-hmm. You let the heart call the shots, and the mind is in service to the heart. And this means that the first reference point is illogical, is beyond thought, is counterintuitive, is probably counterculture, has nothing to do with metrics or measurements or history, what's worked in the past. So you start in the heart, and there are ways to do that. We do that through meditation and contemplation and eating things that don't interrupt, you know, a healthy nervous system and all of that. And then you use the mind in service of the heart. So it would go like this. I have this intuition. I have this dream. My inner guidance has told me this. My higher guidance has informed me, has showed me this. All right. What are the metrics? What are the deliverables? How are we going to operationalize this? What are the KPIs? And you keep going back. Why are we doing this? Because love said to do this. Great. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason. There, you know, we have all the intelligence, all the resources, all the wealth that we need to feed, clothe, educate, house, heal, and have every person on the planet not be alone if they don't want to be alone. What we're missing is the will. And the will is a heart-centered push. That's it. There's just not enough devotion to goodwill. Love is currently not the priority.
Yeah. You're probably familiar with heart math. Remember, I visited it once. You know about the thing how the heart and the mind, they talk to each other within like a fraction of a second? Like when you walk into a party and there's a group of people, like a dozen people, and you don't know who you're really going to maybe walk up and engage with. But you pick one person. And apparently, I think there's a heart variability rate they measured that like you're more in sync with that person than maybe somebody else. And so what's interesting is you think that your mind makes that decision. I'm going to go talk to that person. But actually it's a signal that came from the heart that went to the head and said, that's the person you want to hang with, you know, or talk to or walk up to. And I think that's just so fascinating. That our heart, you know, drives that kind of decision making as well.
They measure the vibration off the brain, the head center, and the heart with an instrument called an electromagnetometer. And the vibration that comes off of the heart chakra is 60 times stronger than that which is coming off of the brain.
Wow.
Yeah. So the heart impulse is the one to follow. It's just, we talk ourselves out of it all the time. It's like, you know, when I talk to people about forgiveness, I think forgiveness is the soul's default. We actually, if we just a nanosecond, just refer to the heart, mm-hmm. you will want to choose forgiving. And then just as quickly we get out of it and we say, oh, well, we signed the contract and they broke the promise. And here's all the 10 reasons why I'm not going to forgive. And there's lots of problems with that. One is it's no fun and you have fewer friends and a lot of legal bills, but also it's an energy blockage.
Yeah.
And, you know, energy blocks of all kinds. You just talk about this in terms of stress and what it does to heart arteries causes, you know, physical damage. I think we can make a direct correlation between withholding love, not making the loving move, and what it does to our bodies.
Totally true. I mean, again, I think because of my parents' background, it's easy for me to feel like a victim. And I had an older sister. She died 2-3 years ago. Her whole life was ruined by taking on the victimization identity from my parents. And so I saw that, you know, but I'm conscious now how easy it is for me to be flipped into feeling that way, which is so self-destructive, obviously, because I'm just making myself feel bad, and it doesn't do any good, and it's really hard to overcome. that feeling. But now that I'm aware of it, I deal with it.
What's the feeling?
Let's say some kind of injustice happens, or you're turned down, or someone, like you say, you know, there's a contract and you didn't live up to it, whatever it might be, then you're the one that got hurt. You're the one that got damaged. You're the one that, you know, wasn't treated fairly, you know, in your head. And therefore, no matter what, you feel like a victim. No matter how just it is, no matter how black and white it is, you are a victim. You know, and it doesn't help to stay in that mode at all. And it's very difficult to forgive, getting back to your earlier point on how we got here, the person who did it, who was grossly wrong, obviously, by maybe a jury of peers, they would say, yeah, that dude was wrong, but it doesn't help at all. Mm-hmm. Having him found guilty, you're still going to feel a victim. Mm-hmm. 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 It's tough.
The power move. This is why forgiving is so powerful, because you really take matters into your own heart. You realize that you have the capacity to transmute it. And in the act of forgiving, you actually, I mean, you're, everything changes. Realize, wow, it's all chemical. It's like, I've got what it takes to change the way I perceive history, the way that person is going to treat me in the future, to care for my biology, to heal my psyche. It's forgiving is powerful.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to do, I don't know if I'm going to do a documentary. Maybe you can do the documentary. I want to do more work on forgiving. And I've started to just kind of casually interview people about their experiences with it. And everybody I've talked to either explicitly uses the word euphoric, or they some synonym for euphoria. Just like, wow, they forgive me and I just felt high. It was the best drug I ever had. Or I asked for forgiveness. I gave forgiveness and I was floating on air when I left the cafe. It was bliss. It's a great drug. It's more than a drug. It's the real thing, actually.
Yeah.
It's the real thing.
Getting rid of excess baggage. You feel a lot lighter, you know?
Yeah. Actually, I would refine that a bit. I would say it's not so much a getting rid of. It's this integration. It's just like, you know, we bring it in. We transmute it. We become more whole. We become bigger. That's the...
And actually, you can be proud of... Well, and maybe proud of yourself for being a courageous person.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something to be, it is something to be proud of. Yeah. Yeah. The gentle pride. Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, boy, we have really traveled the world here. We went from the heart to the universe to reflection. I think we touched on healing without asking about it. Right. What do you think?
Well, what I could add to this about healing is that, you know, as someone who is, you know, I've considered myself like on the spiritual path for a long time. I wanted to be I've gone through phases where always looking outside of myself for healing. Someone's more powerful than I am. They have the answer, some prognosticative something. And then coming to the other extreme of I'm going to heal myself, a little bit of a I don't need anybody kind of thing. I'm going to get the answer. I'm the guru. Both are, and I'm in the center now. Both are true. Like one thing that A Course in Miracles teaches that I love, a lot of which I love, is that all of us are healers. We just temporarily forget. So when someone, you know, there are people on the planet who can help you dissolve the tumor and heal your heartbreak and give you the one mantra insight that's going to really like revolutionize your life. And just for that moment, they remembered their capacity to heal. I've been a little bit blind to my capacity, and I'm just going to receive that grace, and then I can pass it on to somebody else. But somebody else healing you, like legit, does not mean that you don't have the capacity to heal yourself or others now or in the future.
before I close it, I mean, I really, you know, love you and appreciate this conversation. Mm-hmm. Anything I may have missed or you want to talk about that, you know?
No, we just tripped the universe.
We did.
Great.
We tripped the universe. Actually, we did. We went everywhere. We went into the cosmos. We went into the...
Of course, you brought us into the mycelium.
It's great. Had to, of course. In love. Love and connection. It's what it's all about. Wow.
Shall I read something to close?
Sure.
Something from How to Be Loving? Okay.
And I'm really sincere. Your book is great. And I've been listening to the audio. Your reading of it is good too. In the Audible version. And it really is back to back, almost like perfect, you know, nuggets that you want to have as a quote on your desk. There's not a lot of fluff. And a lot of times with some authors, you know, it gets very kind of wordy and elitist. And it's like you have to focus really hard just to follow what they're saying. And I like the fact that you're so down to earth, and every once in a while, you might even throw in a four-letter word just to kind of ground it a little bit so that, you know, we know it's real. And I really, really appreciate that.
Just preaching from my kitchen. Okay, well, this is what I opened it up to. So I guess this is what we need today. There are all kinds of methodologies and mind habits for making progress in life, except not every tool that gets you immediate or surface results is actually helping you to make true progress. So you get immediate results, doesn't mean it's real progress. Speed reading, it's great, as long as you're still able to savor what you read. We can grow muscle mass, but are we in sync with our body's inherent intelligence? We can extend our lifespan, but are we really living? What good are the shortcuts and optimizations if we're not syncing with the pulse of our nature and the laws of the universe? What's driving our obsession with optimization and human performance measurements? Could it be an evolutionary impulse, or could it be the ego on steroids? Here's the thing, you cannot life hack your way to wisdom. The heart wants to take us to that revelatory place where we identify as something greater than our body and our personalities. The heart wants to take us to the depth of consciousness where we do not fear death or old age. And it wants to take us further still to where we self-activate the wisdom in our own cells, those trillions of cells. There's so much exciting science being unfurled to support our wellness, but the greatest frontier is where the mind meets the divine.
Amen. Beautiful. Amen. That's the one thing I did learn in Sunday school. Well, Danielle, this was such a joy to go on this journey of discovery together, not knowing where we'd end up, but we came full circle around the universe. And I think that's pretty cool. So
that's pretty cool. In less than an hour.
I mean, keep
speed doing, of light.
keep shining that bright light that Marianne Williamson said that you are, and I hope it reverberates and fills your soul and replenishes you, so you can just keep on kicking butt forever.
Oh, that's a great blessing. Thank you. Replenish, and I'll keep kicking butt. Yeah, and to you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for joining us, and the Fetzer Institute for helping us, and my team here at Moving Art, everyone from Annie and Courtney and Sarah and Max that helped me edit and keep my act together. let's all scan the universe with gratitude, with beauty, and most importantly, with love.